It's Monday. The sun is shining. The Premier League is back. Not entirely, in part, with some more teams to come. But we're back. It's the Gavin Jewell Show. Julian Lawrence is with me, fresh from his trip to Anfield. There's lots to get into, of course, as ever. We'll be talking a bit of Neymar and Paris Saint-Germain and that absolute car crash of a finish, Jewell.
Terrible.
But we're going to start with the champions, Liverpool and Leeds United. Liverpool winning 4-3, just took two penalties. To help us dissect it a little bit, we're joined by Mark Ogden, who was at the game, as you were.
Indeed.
Augie, first of all, any cause for concern?
From a Liverpool perspective, I think, yes, there is. I wrote a piece saying that there's a lot of complacency, certainly in defensive-wise. You know, Alexander-Arnold was beaten quite easily by Jack Harrison for Harrison's goal. He almost scored a comical own goal second half. You know, Van Dijk made a big mistake. Gomez looked all at sea. I just think that we know they haven't strengthened, but they've also lost Dejan Lovren, who, you know, a lot of people say that Lovren isn't worth keeping.
Behave.
But he added to the sense of competition, and, you know, I don't know who they're... You know, who competes Alexander-Arnold for his place? Well, Gomez maybe, but if Gomez plays, they take him out of the centre-half. They've got Joe Matip. They just look a bit light on options, and I think there's a complacency there, and it showed there was, you know, defensive mistakes all over the place. And if I was a Liverpool fan, and if I was Jurgen Klopp, I would be concerned, certainly going to Chelsea at the weekend, whereby, you know, Leeds picked holes in that defence, and I'm sure Chelsea will pick even more.
I'm less concerned by the individual errors, because I figure they happen. And you can't legislate for them. These weren't all individual errors, though. Some of it was down to team. Sir Alex Ferguson used to say that teams had a cycle and that you had to, you know, you had to continually replace players to help create competitions, otherwise they'd replace the manager and so on. It's one of those truisms out there. What I will say is I don't think any top team in Europe, and I know the transfer window's still open, has gone 2 years without bringing in a starter or a potential starter into the mix, Jules.
Yeah, no, you're right. However, I do think that Fabinho, in a game like that, had he started, would have made a big difference. I know that he came on and they still considered a goal when he came on, but I think he would have made a big difference. But also, I wonder how much this was down, especially that the fact they were all over the place as a back line. So they were very rarely, I don't know where Mark was sat, but they were rarely all on the same line, which you should be as a back four. Was down to the fact that Leeds played in such a different way than anything that Liverpool back four would have faced before, that they never knew, do I have to come out on Hernandez, Clich, Harrison, Elder Costa, Bamford, do I need to go, do I stay, what do I do, shall I go, shall I back? And that's why I think they were always all over the place. And I really wonder if it was just more to the fact that how Leeds played and played so well, the way they attacked, or really that there's a concern to have on those Liverpool defence and defenders. They haven't lost their football in a summer. They haven't had much pre-season. Klopp was saying we've hardly had the time to all get ready together, to have a look at how Leeds were playing all together because of the international break just before. So maybe it was just a case, a bit like against Norwich last season, which was a very similar game. They won 4-1, but it could have easily been 4-3, same place, same time last year, and then they still went on to have a great season. So I don't know. I'm not that worried at all.
All right, so Augie, they didn't have time to prepare for Leeds United. You followed Marcelo Bielsa. You wrote a piece about him last year. You got to see him in the flesh. The thing about Bielsa is... you have certain kind of hipsterish people who, you know, go on and on about what a genius he is. He certainly is different. To people who did not watch Leeds, have not followed his career, can you please describe his footballing concepts and why people go so gaga over him?
I think it's so front foot, isn't it? So the way he plays, it's also adventurous, and there's a lot of risks involved, certainly going forward, and the way they pass the ball at such speed. They moved around so well. We all hear about how the Leeds players train. You know, they report at 9 o'clock in the morning. They leave at 6 o'clock in the afternoon because he absolutely overloads them with tactics and with training plans. And we all have heard about murder ball, where they play for 20 minutes without, you know, the ball going out of play. And if it goes out of play, another one comes in. He's very different. He's an eccentric in the sense of the way he plays the game. He's, you know, we know that Pep Guardiola rates him as a genius, and Pochettino does. And listen, to watch Leeds play, it's very exciting. You know, I remember back in the day when George Graham was Leeds manager and how awful they were back. This is like late 90s, but Leeds now, it's night and day from what they used to be like, the reputation for Leeds. And it's fantastic to watch. But as the FA Cup's at Arsenal last season, at the weekend in Liverpool, they're brilliant to watch. They create lots of chances. They might score the other one, but they will concede a lot of goals. And if we think Liverpool have got problems at the back, then Leeds, for me, you know, if they don't sort those defensive issues out, they'll be exciting, but they might go down.
Jules, is it a case that people figure out Bielsa over time? Because obviously he's been in France, he's been in Spain. Is that what happens? You get diminishing returns?
I think if you look at the game on Saturday and you look especially the way they attacked and the way they were set up in that 4-1 formation, although it was almost a 4-1-5 most of the time when they had the ball, I thought it was quite fascinating to see the positions of the two number eights who were so high up on the pitch. But it's true that that's the way he works. They often do the same thing, the same movement, the pattern of play are the same. It doesn't mean that you can stop them either, because they execute it usually so well, as we saw with Manchester City, for example, or even Liverpool to a certain extent. So good luck on trying to counter what they do the best, but I still think that it will cause problems, like Klopp said after the game, they will cause problems to a lot of teams. Even if you try to work out how they play, even if you get tighter on Calvin Phillips, which Liverpool didn't do, which I thought was a bit silly, but I still think they have a lot to offer. Defensively, they lost their best defender in Ben White, who went back to Brighton. And I guess Robin Koch, their German defender, needs a bit of time, maybe, because he had a shocking game, to be fair.
I wonder too, I mean, this game could have been different if Liverpool had buried some of those chances. Liverpool did create a lot of chances.
Yeah.
Firmino as well, and we know he's not an out-and-out goal scorer. That's kind of what makes him special, what makes the whole thing work. You know, people have used the term false nine. I don't think it really matters as long as a team scores, whether your center forward scores. But there's still chances that you have to convert. Mark, I'm thinking especially the weird one that he took with the outside of his foot.
That was a crazy one.
There was another one where he was through when he cut it back. The guy's a veteran, right? He's not going to change at this point. Is he somebody who's just been playing in a different position and this is what he does, and maybe he just doesn't have that hunger of a goal scorer, and is this going to be a problem this season?
It could be. I mean, I don't know if he doesn't have the hunger of a goal scorer. If you play in that position, you must have some sort of hunger. I mean, over the years there have been strikers who have kind of played that role, where the unselfish striker creates space for other players around him. But you know, I think the issue with Firmino is that he's been part of the Liverpool team that's grown together and become, that he's such a popular player on the pitch, off the pitch. It's almost like there's a sense of, you know, sentimentality there, whereby is Klopp the kind of coach that will look at a player and think, right, you've served your purpose now? You know, it's the thing that Mourinho would always do, that Pep would do, that Fergie would always do, that when a player's served his purpose, they get moved on. I don't see Klopp having that in him. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't see him having that ruthless streak where he says, right, thanks, you've been great for us for 4 years, but you're not scoring enough goals. We need to bring something else to the team.
Yeah, but the difficulty, know, though, in telling Firmino he served his purpose is that he's so important for the work he does off the ball
and for setting up
Salah and Mane.
If you put another striker like Brewster, Salah and Mane won't be as effective, no?
Well, or if you put any other goal scorer, if you put Jamie Vardy in there, you become a different team.
Right now, he doesn't have Jamie Vardy on the bench. No, that's also the problem.
I agree with you, but what I'm saying is that's a difficulty, right? His skill set is so unique that the minute you think about replacing, like, I don't feel like giving Klopp a hard time for not telling Firmino you've served your purpose.
There has to be evolution, though. You can't have the same forward line for 3, 4, 5 years. There has to be some sort of change down the line. And, you know, they were looking at Timo Werner for a reason. Now, obviously, Divock Origi is not good enough to fill the Firmino hole, but these guys
somebody
can't stick around forever.
Somebody put him as player of the season, as I recall. But anyway.
Well, you know, okay. he had a good year in 2019. Big goals, heavy goals. But more heavy goals than Firmino, probably. But, you know, on a long-term basis, Origi clears in the mind. I just think that it's been 4 or 5 years now that he's been in that position, Firmino, and he doesn't score enough goals. He just doesn't score enough goals, simple as that. And he can do all the work off the ball that he wants, but if you're playing the centre-forward role, you need to do a bit more, score more goals.
Jules, Augie and I did our keep and dump for Liverpool, and one of the things that... There were some things that we disagreed on, but one of the things that we agreed on is that you're in a situation right now where, in your starting 11, you have Van Dijk, Henderson, Salah, Mane, Firmino, who are all 28 or older.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have Wijnaldum, who started, I have no idea if he's going to stay or not. He's got a year left to go on his contract, right? That's not an encouraging situation. Because that sends a message that the manager wants to keep this team together short term and then overhaul it later. But it's difficult to overhaul a team when you've got, you know, 5-6 guys who are on big money. And yet Klopp is signed up through 2024. So yeah. Clearly in his mind, he's already thinking, I'm going to build another Liverpool side before I leave. How do you see it? I mean, is there a point to this ruthlessness, or do you think it just would have been Klopp's like, I value the chemistry that I have more than...
I think there's that. But also, this is such a strong team that you can only do it, I think, little by little. This is not a squad where you can get rid of
five. But they're not doing it little by little, because 2 years have gone by. You would think, like, if in over the last 2 seasons they'd added one guy who's a starter-caliber player, but they haven't done that.
However, I think in a normal season with no pandemic, I think Timo Werner is a Liverpool player. And I think this is the start of renewing a bit this squad little by little, because this squad is so strong anyway. And I really believe that because of the pandemic, because of how hard they've been hit, because of the way they run the club, as we mentioned on the show on Thursday, I think that has limited them in what they could do with it. Even just a little touch there, even just bringing one player and letting another one go, like, I don't know, Lallana or whoever. Because I really believe that was the plan from the beginning. You know, you have 2 transfer windows per season. You can do one player in each, and you need 2 seasons, and then already you've renewed your squad. Because he's such a strong squad. And what Van Dijk, you need to give him a new deal. He's 28. And same with Mane and Salah. They've been so good. You can't just think, maybe in 2 years' time.
What you would do is you would sell them before that. But obviously,
why would you sell the guys who've brought you to the top?
And to replace with somebody younger. I mean, I guess that would have been the thinking.
That's the difficulty as well.
I mean, my natural instinct is to defer to Klopp. He's gotten most things right to now. I just want to, Augie, I want to give you the last word on this. In terms of the guys who are not part of the starting lineup, both youngsters, people like Minamino, are there people there who, you know, we can say, well, they haven't acquired any starters, but, you know, maybe Curtis Jones, maybe Minamino himself. Do you see anybody there who can grow into a starter and relieve some of the... I mean, could the solutions be internal?
I could see Curtis Jones at some point becoming a starter, but I don't see anybody knocking the door down right now to say, I need to start. I mean, Minamino, for me, is very much a squad player. Simicast, the left-back that's down from Greece, another squad player. There's nobody you'd think, this guy's going to push somebody out of the team right now. They're a very, very strong first 11. You can't argue that. They're a great team to watch. They've got it. The machine works great, but there should be 2 or 3 people knocking on the door and they're banging on the door to say, you know, let's move this on, let's kind of evolve the team. And I don't see it. And we talk about Liverpool making changes. They had a fantastic year of recruitment between summer 2017, summer 2018, when they brought in, you know, Van Dijk, Fabinho, Alisson, Salah. They haven't really done much since then. And a lot of it was also done by selling Coutinho, which people forget about. 142 million for Coutinho, basically paid for Alisson and Van Dijk. Are they going to have to do that again? Are they going to have to sell a big hitter again to start it all over again? But as you keep saying, Gab, as you rightly said, the big hitters now are in the late 20s, and you're not going to get that kind of money for them. So they are approaching a bit of a difficult problem to solve, because the best players are getting on in years. It will cost a lot of money to replace them, but they can't really sell any of those players to generate the cash. And the younger players coming through, they're not going to sell Trent Alexander-Arnold, I don't think, and they're not going to sell Joe Gomez. But how do they keep that model going of selling high and buying with that money? I don't know. They have got an issue to address maybe a year down the line.
Well, we'll see how things turn out. But I think what's evident, what we can all agree on, is Liverpool, from a team-building perspective, are doing things differently. Whether it works out or not, time will tell. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab.
Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, enough Liverpool. Let's turn to Ligue 1. The biggest rivalry in France, Marseille against Paris Saint-Germain. Second biggest, by Lyon Saint-Étienne. Yeah. All right. It was a nightmarish ending. It's also an ending which had a very ugly tinge to it. Marseille winning 1-0 means Paris Saint-Germain have lost their first two games of the season. We'll get to the football, but we have to start with the incident at the end and what happened during the game. It was effectively a mass brawl. I don't know how else you call it, end.
Yeah.
Five players sent off in total, three from PSG, two from Marseille. Neymar getting into it with Alvaro, the Marseille defender, and then while the whole thing is going on, going and punching him in the back of the head, I guess thinking nobody would see him. I don't know. The serious thing in this is that Neymar's made some very serious accusations towards Alvaro.
Yes, that's right, Gab. You could see it when you were watching the game, you could hear at some point Neymar talking to the referee or the fourth referee saying that, not naming Alvaro directly, but clearly talking about Alvaro, saying that he made racist comments towards Neymar, racist in style, that he abused him racially. That was quite even clearer when Neymar was sent off, left the pitch and said to the fourth referee, "I slapped him in the head because he racially abused me," talking about Alvaro, again, not naming him. Neymar, after the game, French television, Mediapro, who was broadcasting the game, said that they have an audio. They clearly heard Alvaro saying to Neymar, "monkey." Neymar said that he also said other racist insults, sorry. I don't know. Alvaro came out after the game and didn't do anything, just said there's no room for racism in football or anywhere.
Let me guess, did he post a picture of himself with black teammates?
Exactly, okay. The usual. But some people are saying, well, if you didn't do it, then maybe you would come out stronger and said, I deny having done any of the thing that I'm accused of. I'm going to defend myself. I don't know what response Alvaro will eventually give. I don't know where this will going to go, but you can expect it to develop. On Monday, PSG were really, really unhappy with it. So was Neymar, so was his teammates. And of course, they lost the game, which added to all of that. And it was such an ugly game, such a toxic atmosphere, negative. Even the days before the games, and you kind of knew something bad would happen, but I never thought it would be that bad, that ugly.
I think what some people might struggle with a little bit is that if you're racially abused, you know, by an opponent. Obviously, this is different. We've had incidents of racist abuse from fans. Incidents of racist abuse from opponents are more rare, but they happen. You go to the referee and you point it out to the referee. My understanding, we don't have the referee's report yet.
Not yet.
We don't know if it's in there.
But we saw Neymar frequently going to the referee and the fourth referee saying, "no racismo, no racismo, no racismo," to the referee, and clearly saying, right, something happened.
With all due respect, if you want this to end, you know, rather than going there and waving "no racismo," you know, maybe A, you learn French, and B, you say, "hey, look, this guy, number six on the other team," or whoever it was, said this and this to me. I think other people might have heard it. You need to have a word with him or whatever. And then, you know, there is a protocol for you to follow if you want to be enforced. It's certainly not, you're not going to fix this issue by going and, while nobody's looking, or when you think nobody's looking, going and punching him on the back of the head, especially when it's such a delayed reaction, right?
Of course.
Obviously, nobody's going to condone violence, but you can understand it if it's a reaction to being racially abused. But he was racially abused in minute 36, and he played the rest of the game with a niggly back and forth and whatever.
There's the biggest altercation just before the red card and the mass brawl. There's a big altercation between Neymar and Alvaro where maybe some more words were exchanged then, and then straight after,
that's when it happens. That's the one where Neymar pushes him over when he's out of bounds. It's an ugly situation. Hopefully they'll put some clarity. These are very serious accusations. Very disappointing that it would happen at this stage.
There's also the Di Maria
spitting
on Alvaro in the first half, where Alvaro is at, you can't really see on the footage that we saw, you can't really see it properly, but Alvaro was adamant, and Andre Villas-Boas at the end as well, saying like, "we saw Di Maria, who by the way just tested positive for COVID, spitting on Alvaro or in the direction of Alvaro." I don't know where the the spit went because we could not see it. But if that on top of everything else, plus the red card, it's like, what's going on? Why are you doing this? This is the worst publicity ever for Ligue 1. This is a big game. I'm all for rivalry. I'm all good, but not when it descends into chaos like that, when people are doing crazy stuff.
Well, let's talk about this, especially from Paris Saint-Germain's perspective, because obviously in their run to the Champions League final, you know, on the football side, they showed a lot of the qualities that supposedly they didn't have, great resilience, teamwork. It looked like they wanted, you know, they were kind of winning the PR battle. Does this set them back?
Yeah, of course it does. I think it does. And it set back Ligue 1 as well, because after Lyon and PSG did so well, I think there was a bit of buzz and said, OK, look, it's not as bad as maybe people thought it was as a league. And then first big game of the season in September, this happens and it's broadcasted all over the world and everybody's watching and you go and this is that was not even football. There was no football involved in that game at all. It was disgraceful. So, yeah, of course, I think there's a bit of hangover from the Champions League final that they lost. There's been loads of issues that we mentioned regularly on the show, with players testing positive for COVID, not being there, clearly not having a proper pre-season doesn't help. But still, I mean, come on, not falling that, when you went that high and you're falling that low, I think it's just very, very worrying.
All right, Jules, let's dive a little deeper into PSG. As you know, I look at Thomas Tuchel, the rule breaker, as he once called himself, looking like some large stick insect. At least he doesn't have his crutch anymore. He was totally downtrodden at the end. Was it with Paris Saint-Germain's performance, the result? I mean,
yeah, the referee, I think he was unhappy with at the end. He said his team played great. He said, we had a great game. We played great. I'm really happy, considering the circumstances again, the fact that Neymar and Di Maria only trained once in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay, sorry. We're talking about
this is not a great game. He's lying. No. Okay. We didn't watch the same game.
Yeah, okay, because this whole thing with the circumstances, I mean, first of all, unlike the first game of the season, you look at the Paris Saint-Germain lineup, including my man, Florenzi, the magic man.
Yeah, did really well. Did really well.
This was a legitimate lineup. Not Paris Saint-Germain's best lineup, but it's not like all of a sudden, you know, you've got Gilles, Alain,
no, I know, but there's still four starters missing, right? So there's a third of your team that's not there. Navas, Icardi, and Mbappe, Marquinhos. That's true. So it's still, but still, with
Navas
the team that
is a goalkeeper, so Sergio Rico's fine. That's not the reason you lost.
Well, he's fine, except on the goal.
Icardi depends.
On the goal, he's asleep. On the goal, he's asleep. I think on the goal, he's counting how many people are in the stands. 4,100. Okay, they're all here. They're all here. But no, I get your point. Okay, go on.
Are the things Tuchel should have done differently?
Well, I mean, there's no way Pablo Sarabia, who's a lovely young man, good player, nothing exceptional, but should play the whole game. I'm sorry. I don't think Julian Draxler should come on in a game like this. We had a game against Lens, as you said, in midweek with a C team, where two youngsters started. Case Ruiz and Calvin Mendo, who did okay in the circumstances. Bring one on. I don't want to see Draxler in a game like this. I mean, at some point, he made a pass. I mean, even producer Freddy would have passed that ball better with more efficiency than Draxler did. It was ridiculous. Draxler should not play for PSG anymore. They're trying to sell him. If you're trying to sell him, keeping in the warm or in the cold, I don't know, and just don't make him play those games, because he's not good enough anymore. His head is not there.
I think it's a head thing with Draxler, and you're right. You either, I think there's a player in there. He's shown enough before coming to PSG that he can be a really good player. He just hasn't been that player, whether it's psychological or whatever. I think that happens sometimes.
Yeah. And Paredes? You're Thomas Tuchel, right? You see what's happening on the pitch for 72 minutes.
Right.
You know how tense it is, the pressure, how crazy. Just one thing like this and it would explode, right?
You know, this is exactly. So basically, well, again, you should see the highlights of this just in a car crash kind of sense. You have the incident between Mbappe and Alvaro where he just goes
Neymar,
and shoves
Neymar,
him. Sorry,
Neymar
and Alvaro. Yeah, Mbappe wouldn't do that. It's a goal kick. And I'm like, all right, here we go. You know, the ball's contested. Dario Benedetto, you know, the magic tattoo man, standing there waiting for the ball. But it just comes and just cleans him out. I mean, that was some Ronnie Lott type stuff.
Yeah,
that was some Andre Waters type stuff. Boom. And then that sets everything off. Yeah.
You see what I mean? The game is TNT. It would explode if there's just a little bit of spark somewhere, right? You bring on Paredes. What does Paredes do? That's what he does. That's what the guy is. A good player, can see a pass, can pass the ball well, but the guy is troubled when he wants to be, and well, he hadn't touched the ball that he already clattered into Payet, got yellow card before even getting the ball. And then after that, you knew we were going to explode.
Can we have a word on Marseille, please? Because,
yeah, of course.
You know, I'm down with AVB. You know me. But it looks like he's trying to make things, he's getting the best out of this group in very difficult circumstances.
You're right. And credit to them and to AVB, because they hadn't won in Paris for 10 years. They had those 20 games in a row without beating them. And then they go there, they're solid, they're very well organized, nothing exceptional going forward. They didn't do much going forward, but they scored a good goal on set pieces. They were very big solidarity. He did some really good things in midfield, AVB. The man management was brilliant through the game. His coaching was far much better than Tuchel in who he brought in, who he brought off. And I think, you know, I think they could be really happy today, because after last season and that second place, overachieving, he had a bit of money to spend and got a few players there and there. And then
I think
a striker, but he's doing a really good job there.
I know he burned some bridges before, but I think he's ready for another, for at least another top team to look at
him. I agree.
Because there's a guy in there still young. I want to deal with the Mbappe thing, because obviously there were very strong reports that he had demanded, or he's
well,
basically
one
announced
strong,
that.
One strong report, yeah.
But it got a lot of play.
Yeah.
That he was going to leave at the end of the season. What's your understanding here?
So that's not true. He didn't tell anyone, or his dad didn't tell, or his lawyer didn't tell anyone that he wanted to go. He was ready to go at the end of the season. His contract, as you know, runs out in June 2022. We've talked a lot about it on the show and on ESPN overall. Leonardo and PSG are really hoping to sit down with him and his dad very soon to try to see if he would renew his contract. They're quite optimistic from the talk that they've had in the last 6 months. It might not happen, and he might not want to, and he might end up leaving at the end of the season, or he might want to run down his contract. I don't know what he will do. But there's more optimism than pessimism at the club right now to the fact that he will renew his deal, even if it's just 1 year. At some point, he will leave. Of course, he will leave. He will go to Real Madrid or to Liverpool or to Juventus or to Bayern Munich or wherever. But they're really hoping to keep him a bit longer. But he certainly hasn't told anyone that he had decided to leave, and he's made his mind up.
I wonder if the solution from his perspective is, I mean, if you'll go for it, do some sort of extension with a fixed buyout clause, you know, to help Paris Saint-Germain plan and budget. He gets the benefit of knowing how much it's going to cost, gets that little bit more security. But, I mean, the idea of him a year from now, I mean, he doesn't say he wants to leave or not. The reality is, a year from now, it's going to be in Paris Saint-Germain's interest to sell him if he doesn't extend.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. But then he'll be 22. You could also go the Cristiano United way, where you said to him, okay, give us 1 more year, you sign, and then we will sell you. We will let you go in a year time. So,
right.
You know, in June 2022, he would have extended 2 or 3 years, and then you can get some good money back, and it gives you another year, and then you could.
I think this one's going to run a while.
Yeah, for sure.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough of all that. Here's the part we all really love. It's time for Quick Hits.
Let's go, Gab.
Tottenham Hotspur open up by losing at home to Everton 1-0. Jose complains of his players' preparation and their mindset, calling them lazy. Jules, isn't he kind of blaming himself here and not passing the buck?
I don't know anymore with him. I mean, what I don't understand, Gab, is the day before the game, he gives the line, I'm really happy, I'm so optimistic about this season, everything is great. Then he loses a football match the next day, less than 24 hours later, and he goes like, yeah, but it's because, you know, he was a shambles before. Hang on, yesterday you said you were happy, optimistic, everything was fine, and now you say it was a shambles. You blame COVID, we had players, I can't name them, but we had players. We know they had Ndombele, because the French national team said it. But, and he said, I don't know. I thought they were really poor. Maybe not so much the first half, but certainly the second half. Harry Kane touched the ball twice in the Everton box in 90 minutes, twice. the best striker in the
Pickford
country.
Pickford still had to make two big saves before we get too excited.
Yeah, true. But the first half was not as bad as the second. The second was pathetic, but he has to take a bit of blame, you know, even if the circumstances, like for everybody else, are not ideal.
I think with Lo Celso, this is a completely different team. Without Lo Celso, then it's long ball and defending.
With Dele Alli instead of Lo Celso, you know.
Oh, you find a different position for Dele Alli, not in that role, not this version of Dele Alli.
Well, he got off at halftime, I guess that's why. Meanwhile, Gab, there were doubts, and including me, I have to say, you know, I was a bit skeptical about James Rodriguez being able to cope with the physicality and the speed of the Premier League. Have those been put aside, at least for now, after that first game?
Okay, so this game, I mean, I was only watching on TV, but this was not exactly one of those blood and thunder hyper.
It wasn't at all.
Game.
I mean, there was no pressure from Spurs.
But no, the guy can play. And, you know, Ancelotti came out afterwards and said he's obviously not the quickest guy in the world, quickest, most athletic guy in the world. But if he were, I would, if I wanted, that's what I wanted, I would have signed Usain Bolt and not James. The guy can play. If the team is built around him, and built around it doesn't mean he sits in the middle, although it's probably his best position. You know, he was playing wide
right. Yeah,
but everybody around him was adjusting. He's got three guys in the middle in Andre Gomes, Doucouré, and Allen, who was really, really good.
Yeah, it was good.
Who run around. They provide that physicality. They provide that energy. Calvert-Lewin's always willing. If he hits the ball across, Richarlison's really good at making those runs. Yeah, it can work, and he can give you that extra quality. I don't think he's going to play in this level every week, but, you know, if there's one person who can make it work, it's Carlo.
It's the consistency, though, as we said last week. You know, with him, he's capable of that, very capable, but can he do it, as you said?
When he plays consistently and the team is built around him, he produces consistently. Now, Barcelona played their first friendly of the season, beating Nastic 3-1, and we got a vague sense of what they might look like. Griezmann was up front in a 4-2-3-1 with Messi on the flank. When they were awarded a penalty, Lionel Messi let Griezmann, who's missed several in a row for France, take it.
So sweet. Best friends. That's what friends do. That's what best friends do. I think, listen, we need a bit more time than Gymnastic Tarragona, you know, to get either excited or think, okay, all is good under Koeman. It was a 4-2-3-1, which was very different than what we've known before. He changed everything at halftime, but we still saw some good things, good passage of plays, I thought. You know, they've got another 10 days.
The captain's gesture, be nice to Messi. He's fully on board.
And he was smiling and he looked happy,
exactly.
Messi did. So, you know, why not? Uli Hoeneß was on the warpath for Bayern at the weekend. He said that Premier League clubs were trying to blackmail them over Thiago, and he called David Alaba's agent, who is Pini Zahavi, a money-grubbing piranha. Why is he so upset? What's wrong with him? He's just won the treble.
Well, first of all, this is a bit of a loaded term. I mean,
money grubber, yeah.
That's not.
Careful.
It's not a great thing to say.
Nice.
It's also not a great look when you consider, you know, out of Pini Zahavi and Uli Hoeneß, only one of these two guys has spent time in prison for tax evasion, and it's not Pini Zahavi. but anyway, look, he's angry because he's saying clubs are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, right? If Thiago, he's got a year left, he's saying, well, they already have a deal in place with Thiago, but these clubs, you know, thought to be Liverpool, Manchester United, but who knows? But, you know, they're not calling us because they want to wait till the last possible moment, put us in a... Yeah, it's called negotiating. It's called leverage. It's what you're supposed to do. As far as David Alaba, who's been at the club for 12 years, he wants to get the best possible deal for himself, right? Mm. He's entitled to do this. This is the last big payday of his career. You know, when it comes to approaching players at other clubs who've got contracts winding down, I think you'll find it's something that Bayern have done in the past. It's the business of football.
Have they never got anyone who was on free from, let's say, another club in Germany?
Like maybe, you know...
Like a big, strong striker.
Lewandowski,
perhaps.
Yeah. You know, Alexander Nubel last year.
Yeah, I mean, hang on.
I love Uli Hoeneß. I want to say the privilege of eating at his favorite restaurant next to his house, overlooking the lake. It's a wonderful guy. But I think he let himself down a little bit here.
Yeah, I agree.
Chelsea play Monday night against Brighton, and reports say they are inching closer to signing goalkeeper Edouard Mendy from Rennes. Jules, is he an upgrade over Kepa or simply an alternative to Kepa?
He's an alternative. I think there would be competition between the two. He's a late bloomer, as I've said on the show many times. He's only 28 now, but really 5 years ago almost quit football because there was no club for him. So he will come in. He's room for him. Improvement still, but had an incredible last two seasons. It's a deserved move for him. It's quite a cheap move, 30 million euros, I think. And it'd be very interesting
close, right?
To see. Yeah, very close. I think it will happen this week. Gab, Arsenal stomped all over Fulham 3-0 on Saturday. Were you impressed, or are you going to give me the line, oh, but it's only Fulham and, you know, we need to see more, blah, blah, blah?
It is only Fulham, and they could have gone a goal down. But yes, it's impressive. It's impressive. I mean, Arteta's clearly on an upward trajectory. Yeah. So I look at this as like Arsenal short-term, Arsenal long-term. Arsenal short-term, because Arteta's a good manager and because they have good players, looks good. Arsenal long-term isn't going to look like this because Arsenal long-term probably won't have Elneny in the middle, who, by the way, I thought had a good game.
They will keep the same way of playing, right?
No, because if Dani Ceballos plays instead of Elneny, those are different players with different characteristics.
I know, but you see the patterns of play already.
You see it because Arteta's a good coach. I just don't know how it's going to work out long-term. And as you know, Willian, outstanding. We know he can do that. He was good late in the season as well.
Yeah.
But again, committing all that money, assuming, by the way, that Aubameyang signs. And look, you've told me every day,
yes, oh, it's relax, coming, it's like coming. Arteta says, relax.
Yeah,
like
we're all Arteta relaxed. Says. But yeah, it just seems like a ton of money to tie up in three guys who, you know, average age is going to be, what, 31? So short term, no worries. Long term, still got questions. Martin Odegaard is, in practical terms, Real Madrid's only newcomer this season. Jules, how much is he going to play?
I think he's going to play. That's why Zidane wanted him back. He had a two-year loan at Real Sociedad. There's a reason why you bring him back now instead of letting him play again and keep developing at Real Sociedad like he did so well last season. I think he will play. He brings something very different. One is left-footed, which they don't have any other left-footed players in midfield. Good on him. He showed so many
issues
promises.
Of depth in the middle of the park, which some people supposedly think they had.
Exactly. Andrea Pirlo has never coached before, so we were all curious to see what his Juventus team might look like. Gab, they had a friendly against Novara. What did you learn?
Well, I learned that he likes his back three. I learned that it was a 3-5-2 setup. Kulusevski and Cristiano up front. And he loves committing a bazillion people forward and getting them play short, intricate patterns, changes of positions. He's basically gotten a Juve team, at least this first version, these first 45 minutes of Juve, were basically a little, if Andrea Pirlo were a team, that is what they would look like. That is what he would like.
That would change once they have a striker, right? Center forward.
I don't know. Well, I mean, they could be Cristiano and Dybala. I don't know what he's going to do, but this first glimpse was certainly intriguing.
That's good.
Speaking of Juventus, they had to pay him $2 million to leave, but Gonzalo Higuain has finally moved on, joining Inter Miami. Jules, good signing for MLS?
I think it's a good signing for MLS. We're all looking forward to the Higuain brothers facing each other. It's always fun when, you know, you play your brother. But I think he's good. He's 32. He still have a lot of talent in him, even with the issues that we've had and we know about. Gab, Eintracht Frankfurt have signed Andre Silva on a permanent move from Milan, which means that he can renew his partnership with your boy Bas Dost. You must be excited.
I'm super excited. Both of them scored and assisted for each other at the weekend. You know I love my Bas Dost. Bas Dost watch, always a regular on my Monday Musings feature. Valencia beat Levante 4-2 in their Liga debut, which is also a derby, of course. But Javi Gracia says they still need help. Gee, thank you, Captain Obvious. Although it's good that Javi Gracia spoke out. I mean, they've lost Coquelin, Dani Parejo, Rodrigo, and Ferran Torres over the summer. So if anything, that's an understatement, right, Jules?
It is, although it was still, a decent team that I started. There was a few youngsters and still some good players like Gaia, like Manga,
single player on the team. Okay,
it's not that. It's not like if he had to play
Peter Lim.
It's not like if he had to play the under 18s either. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, of course they could do better. It was a really good game, and Levante played really well in the first half too. But of course, if Valencia want to achieve stuff, they will need to recruit a bit and spend a bit of the money that they got for selling all those players, which was crazy. But again, I still think that there's decent players in that squad left that you can build. You can
top four. Okay, all right.
Top eight, okay. Maybe. Arjen Robben's come back, Gab. We were all waiting for it. It was there for us. Groningen against PSV Eindhoven. What was it, 20 years after he made his debut there or something? And it lasted 29 minutes. He will be back, right? Let's hope.
Yeah, it looks like a muscular thing. We'll know more.
But you knew it was not going to happen like this. Be honest.
I mean, look. Mad props to Robin for still being out there and competing after all these years. His injury record over the years kind of speaks for himself. He is just somebody who breaks down. And I love the fact, you know, the story that he was inspired by the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary, which you saw on ESPN Plus, no doubt. I don't know. It's great. I just want to see him out there trying out. I don't want him to get hurt, get any lasting damage.
No.
But you know what? A couple training sessions, and I'm sure he'll be fine. Now, we haven't mentioned United yet, and we're contractually obliged to talk about Manchester United on every single show. So let me give you an interesting hypothetical, okay. Jules. So if Jadon Sancho doesn't sign this window, there are three veteran winger types that they could bring in. And, you know, these guys are all big earners, but you could sign them on loan with an option to buy or whatever. They wouldn't cost you very much. Just to hold you over for a year, maybe two. Which one of these three guys would you be most interested in? Douglas Costa, Ivan Perisic, or Gareth Bale?
No one. Leave me alone. Be creative, United, please. Be creative. Don't go and get the veteran that is passed from one club to another club, or Bayern Munich or Juventus. Douglas Costa, do you want to go to United? Here we go. They need... Please.
Perisic played pretty well last season when he was used. Okay. And he had some big shown he can compete. You know, even like Perisic.
No, okay. Maybe United he would be the only one. He would be the one. But please, why don't you just look at your, you know, stats, the network that your scouts have done, built, your scout reports, have a look of what's done in other countries, in other clubs. See, but please come up with someone else than those three that...
You know why, Jules? And this is the ugly truth, right? If you're in Manchester United and you come knocking for a player, they're immediately going to charge stupid amounts of money, unless it's Daniel James. And so they're saying, okay, we can pay stupid amounts of money. We'll pay 120 million or 100 million or whatever. We will chuck a lot of resources at Jadon Sancho, who we really like long term.
But
if they're going to go for somebody intermediate like that, they're going to go and pay over the odds, and they'll be put in that position because people take advantage of Manchester United. Certainly have them in the past.
City didn't do that with Ferran Torres. Why didn't United go for Ferran Torres then?
I think Ferran Torres had a clause, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Of course. But still, you know, like they are players that you can sign without being.
I wouldn't have a problem if one of these. Well. Right. Perisic, actually.
Yeah, you see? Already he's down to just one for you.
Douglas Costa's good. He's quick. He's fast. He also gets hurt all the time.
Yeah.
And has, you know, isn't
and
the sharpest
tool in the box.
And
he's got no tactical awareness, no intelligence, nothing.
And Bale? Yeah? Yeah, okay. Let's move on.
Well, last one, Gab. Talking about veterans who are available. Edinson Cavani. He's still on the market. We love El Matador. What has he been doing lately, though?
Well, as you would expect from the man who looks like clean-shaven Jesus, he's been doing ballet. Yes, there you go. A bit like that. First position, please. Look, it's a wonderful workout. If you look at if you've ever seen ballet, male ballet dancers up front,
physical, yeah.
Right? They're super strong. They're all sinewy and stuff. And, you know, if this helps preserve his physical integrity until a new team comes along, more power to him. Nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, no,
balance,
I agree
coordination.
With you.
It's a tremendous workout.
Yeah, it is.
Not right for me, but maybe you. Are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me it's what you do down the gym?
Nah, but when I was little, when I was a young boy, my mum, who's big on ballet and dancing and stuff, put me at ballet.
Really? You're a former ballet dancer.
I was doing football and dancing. I was the only boy. Yeah, it lasted a year. I stayed a year. And after that, I said, like, can I just do football, please? And she let me.
That's a disappointing outcome but at least
I
you know, got
but that. At least I gave you, you know, something that you didn't know about me.
All right, enough of this on this Monday, which is lovely because, of course, the Premier League is back and La Liga is back.
Yeah.
Less lovely because my Eagles threw away 17 points.
Oh, I didn't want to say anything. I mean, I was...
Eight times they sacked Carson. Eight times.
I mean, I would have done a better job defensively. That's why I was watching. I was like, maybe we should play for the Eagles. I mean, we scored a touchdown here in the office for the Eagles not long ago. We didn't get an offer, nothing. So there will be better days. There's always next week. And it could be worse. You could have Tom Brady as a quarterback, you know. Gets intercepted and loses his first game as well. So, you know.
Yeah, I suppose there's a bit of a silver lining there.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to be back Thursday. Do this again. Join us.